The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, there's quite a bit that we've been posting at thetrumpet.com, quite a bit more that we'll be rolling out today. So if you haven't taken a look this week at the new and improved Trumpet website, make sure that you check it out periodically through the day. We had more traffic, I believe, yesterday than any other Wednesday this year so far. So quite a few of you are looking at what God's work is producing online. Well, the day before Donald Trump's inauguration, outgoing President Barack Obama, he made one final phone call to a world leader, and that was German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Mrs. Merkel's husband and the First Lady, Michelle Obama, they were also on the line for this warm final chat. And following the warm exchange, the White House released this statement saying, given their 8 years of friendship and partnership, the president noted that it was fitting that his final call with a foreign leader was with Chancellor Merkel, and he wished her the very best going forward. You might remember that I think it was 2 months before that phone call, during President Obama's final foreign trip, that he also made a stop in Berlin, where he was able to personally say goodbye to his dear friend, Chancellor Merkel. Ahead of that visit, the president singled out Mrs. Merkel as his closest international partner. If you go back a few years, 2011, the president awarded Mrs. Merkel the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And he said that she was an eloquent voice for human rights and dignity worldwide. Now, I think it's safe to say that Angela Merkel's probably not going to be receiving any noteworthy awards from Donald Trump, at least not anytime soon. Even before the inauguration, a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Trump slammed Mrs. Merkel for her open-door policy on immigration. He said she was letting everyone in and that it was a catastrophic mistake. That's the way he put it. A catastrophe. Now you compare that to what Barack Obama said less than a year ago about how Merkel was handling the refugee crisis. He praised her as being courageous in letting them all in. He said she's giving a voice to the kinds of principles that bring people together rather than divide them. Donald Trump clearly is not Barack Obama. Trump, as you know, if you've been listening to this program, he sees the European Union as Germany's vehicle. He says that it was formed. The EU was formed to beat the United States on trade. That's why it's here. That's why he doesn't like it. That's why he's encouraging others to leave. That's why he's praising Britain. And of course, more recently, he's said that to even out this trade imbalance, well, he's going to take aim even at Germany's automaking giants, Mercedes-Benz, BMW. He's specifically threatened with a 35% tariff on German cars coming into the United States. And then you know about what was said earlier this week, on Tuesday, I guess it was, President Trump's trade chief, Peter Navarro. He accused Germany of currency manipulation. He called Europe's single currency an implicit Deutschmark that Germany had grossly undervalued in order to exploit the rest of Europe and also the United States. It's amazing how fast things have changed. January 19th, the day before the inauguration, the final phone call between a U.S. president and a German chancellor and their spouses on the line with them and all of these warm exchanges. And then look at where we are today. Of course, Germany is, and the rest of Europe for that matter, they've had a fair bit to say in response to the Trump administration. You'll recall even after the election, Mrs. Merkel was, well, she gave kind of a conditional statement of support for Donald Trump. And then later told the Bild magazine in Germany, "We Europeans have our fate in our own hands." And she, I think it was later on that she reasserted the, this is a quote, "The fight against terrorism cannot justify," actually this is from this week, "the fight against terrorism cannot justify this kind of generalized action against specific countries and people of certain religious faith." Of a certain religious faith. That was in response to Donald Trump's executive order from last Friday, aimed at those seven nations to prevent terrorists from getting into the United States. And you know about all the Spiegel pieces we've been drawing attention to. Spiegel the other day saying that Trump was attacking Germany. He was attacking the global economy. He's attacking the German model. And earlier this week also, you had the EU president, the president of the European Council, Donald Tusk. He listed the United States under Trump's leadership as one of the dangers that Europe is facing, as one of the unpredictable factors the European Union must consider as it comes together in Malta tomorrow, the leaders of the member states, to discuss the road ahead. And then you have this today from the German website, Handelsblatt. It's aimed at the business community in Germany, kind of like the Financial Times, I guess. But it says here, EU may declare U.S. a tax haven. And the article says, as relations rapidly deteriorate between the United States and the European Union, a new topic may become a source of tension. Possible tax malpractice on the part of the United States. And if matters escalate, the EU could add the U.S. to a blacklist of tax havens to be published this year, Handelsblatt has learned. So here's one way the European Union could strike back at the United States. Just Tuesday, you have Donald Trump's trade chief talking about Germany manipulating its currency. Its currency being the euro, the implicit Deutschmark. And now this report from Handelsblatt. It says it's long been known that some American states, notably Delaware and Nevada, attract companies and high net worth individuals with special tax arrangements. For many years, the European Union looked the other way, unwilling to annoy their most important ally, but this could soon change. This could soon change. An increasing number of Europeans may agree with the Green parliamentarian. It says a quote from this guy in Parliament. Readiness to give special treatment to the United States has been rapidly dwindling since the election of Donald Trump to the presidency. Well, then it goes on to say all these things that Trump has, all these descriptions he's had for the EU, this bureaucratic monster, as he sees it, and how that the union was formed in order to to get a trade advantage over the U.S. And it mentions all the comments by Navarro earlier this week about currency manipulation and such. And then Handelsblatt goes on to say, after initial hesitation, European political figures have begun to vehemently respond to Mr. Trump's attacks and decisions. In this tense atmosphere, it seems far from unlikely that Europe could also take a critical approach to American tax policy. And so all of this rhetoric, it's certainly heating up. All of these accusations, there's a rhetorical war, you could say. And where is it leading, as we've been asking throughout this week? Another piece here, this is actually written by Germany's foreign, former foreign minister, Joschka Fischer. It's over at Project Syndicate. And he's describing here Germany, or what Germany needs to be thinking about now in the age of Trump. Given what he said, even at his inaugural address, about America first, the signal that this sends to Germany and Europe and the rest of the world. It's as if America abandons its role as the leading economic and military power and moves toward nationalism and isolationism. It will precipitate an international reordering while also changing the country itself. And it goes on and talks about some of the history since World War II and how Europe has been, or rather the United States, has been the engine of global free trade. And that if America moves toward protectionism and isolationism, the world is going to be rocked. And we better get ready. The full implications, it says, of such a shift are largely unpredictable, but we all know, or should know, that what happened the last time the world's leading powers turned inward. He's referring back to the 1930s. It says the alliances, multilateral institutions, security guarantees, international agreements, and shared values underlying the current global order might soon be called into question or rejected altogether. If that happens, the old Pax Americana will have been needlessly destroyed by America itself. See, America's the bad guy. Now with Trump in there, America's taking all the blame. And a lot of things that Mr. Trump's pointing out, as Ambrose Evans Pritchard said yesterday or the day before, they're true. And Germany doesn't like it. Europe doesn't like it. It says here, and with no obvious alternative framework to replace it, all indicators point to turbulence and chaos in the near future. And then notice the history that Fischer gets into here. Coming out of World War II, he says, America's two former enemies, Germany and Japan, will be among the biggest losers if the U.S. abdicates its global role under Trump. I mean, if America pulls in, if America turns toward isolationism, Germany's the loser, he says. Japan's the loser. These are the ones that are suffering, you see. He says both countries experienced total defeat in 1945, and ever since, they have rejected all forms of Machtstaat, or power state is the meaning of that German word that I probably mispronounced. In any event, it says, with their security guaranteed by the U.S., they transformed themselves into trading countries. See, they've just been peace-loving trading countries all these years, Germany and Japan, and have remained active participants in the U.S.-led international system. If Trump takes away the U.S. security umbrella, these two major economic powers will have a serious security problem on their hands. You see where this is leading, don't you? The stage is being set. It's just one column after another, one long piece in Handelsblatt or in Spiegel or wherever else in Germany. Allgemeine Zeitung, you name them. They're all over the place. Calls for Germany to rebuild its military. Calls for Germany to produce a common military force. A unified military force. It says, Germany lies in the heart of Europe and is surrounded by its previous wartime enemies. It is the continent's largest country in economic and demographic terms, but it owes much of its strength to the American Security Guarantee and multilateral, transatlantic, and European institutional frameworks based on shared values and free trade. The existing international order has rendered the Machtstaat and its accompanying sphere of influence unnecessary. And then it concludes here, Germany and all other European countries must now do all they can to boost their contributions to collective security within the EU and NATO. Thrift is undoubtedly a virtue, but other considerations should take priority when one's house is on fire and about to collapse. That's the image that Fisher leaves us with. That's the comparison he makes. Europe's house is on fire. We are in grave danger. We have to boost those contributions and build that collective security unit. It concludes here, along with all the dangers Trump's presidency poses for Europeans. This is Joschka Fischer, the former foreign minister. Germany's foreign minister, he used to be. Along with all the dangers Trump's presidency poses for Europeans, it offers opportunities as well. And that's the thing. This, more and more, are viewing as an opportunity. He says Trump's protectionist rhetoric alone has already led to a rapprochement between China and Europe. We've talked this week about this forming Berlin-Beijing alliance. It says, more important, the new U.S. administration has furnished Europeans with a chance finally to close ranks, to grow up, and reinforce their geopolitical power and position. Now, given how he concludes his piece there, Joschka Fischer, I want you to think about what he said there at the end. Went through all this history. He said, look, we're the ones that are going to suffer the most from this. And while there's a lot of bad things to point out here, let's not overlook the fact that this also represents an opportunity. This is an opportunity. And don't for a second assume that no one in Germany is thinking this way. I had a chat yesterday with my father on the phone, and we were discussing this very point. How Donald Trump's going to be made out to be the bad guy. He's the provocative one. He's the one abandoning allies. He's the one putting up trade barriers. He's the one hurling insults. And this is just the opportunity Germany has been waiting for. This is the opportunity they've been waiting for. We've pointed to what Spiegel's been saying this week about Donald Trump. But what about some of the other headlines that have appeared in Spiegel over the years? The one 2 years ago, for example, that was headlined, The Fourth Reich, What Some Europeans See When They Look at Germany. Let's talk about Germany for a moment. Let's talk about the Fourth Reich. Let's talk about the heavy hand they've used in those southern member states. Let's talk about the way they have manipulated the euro. Currency manipulation. Ambrose Evans Pritchard yesterday, or the day before. Trump is right. Germany is running an illegal currency racket. That's Ambrose Evans Pritchard, a reputable journalist here in the UK. He said, as a matter of strict objective fact, Donald Trump's trade guru is correct. Germany is the planet's ultimate currency manipulator. Now, that's not going over well in Germany. There's leaders in Germany that don't like hearing that. And so they're going to pile it on President Trump. They're going to make him look like a crazed lunatic. No leader's perfect, for sure. But let's remember what the Bible prophesies about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. You'll remember what we've played over and again on this program. We've used it on TV as well, this clip from Herbert Armstrong. I think it's a couple of minutes long, but here he is talking about what he had prophesied for so many years, his signature prophecy, you could say. I think it's clip 8.
Well, greetings, friends around the world. Now, I've been telling our radio audience and readers of The Plain Truth that a political union of 10 nations in Europe would rise, resurrecting the Holy Roman Empire of the Middle Ages. I was predicting this even before World War II began. Not many believed it then. Well, let me quote to you what I wrote in an article in The Plain Truth of July 1935, 4 years before World War II was started by Adolf Hitler. I'll just quote a little out of the center of that entire article that shows what the article was saying and what it was talking about. Listen, quote, out of the present Italy is to emerge a reincarnation of the once great and powerful Roman Empire by an alliance of 10 nations within its territory. That was 4 years before World War II began. Biblical prophecy revealed that it would start as an economic movement, that it would bring an era of unusual prosperity to Europe. It did start in March 1957, when 6 European countries, West Germany, France, Italy, Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg, signed the Treaty of Rome, creating what was called the EEC, that is, the European Economic Community. It has been known, of course, as the European Common Market, and it came into being, actual operation, that is, on January the 1st, 1958. Immediately, it began to bring economic prosperity to those 6 countries and has provided economic competition for Britain, for the United States, and for other countries around the world. For years, European nations have wanted to unite in a sort of United States of Europe. What they want is political union, but they've never been able to bring that about. While President de Gaulle of France lived, Germany would never have yielded to accept him as the political head of a union, including Germany, and the French would not accept a German. Long-range plans are already underway for a common currency in Europe, but other things are going to intervene in the meantime that I want to tell you about, and I predict that there will be a common currency a great deal sooner in Europe. Now, how did I know, as far back as 1927 even, that this coming United States of Europe would spring up in our time? I knew because it's revealed in biblical prophecy.
He knew because it's revealed in the Bible. Bible prophecy, and we've talked this week about just how crucial that is, how important it is to your spiritual diet overall. It keeps us fired up. It keeps that fire burning that Jeremiah the prophet spoke of in Jeremiah 23. It keeps us urgent, constantly on the lookout for what's coming next. You look at what the Bible prophesies, and then also look at history. Look at the history. Here, Germany was responsible for both world wars. Germany instigated both World War I and World War II. And as Mr. Armstrong wrote, this was in a letter that he wrote that he included back in his old correspondence course lessons. He said that in 1943, when Germany's top generals and scientists and industrialists and bankers, when they realized they were about to lose the Second World War, they drew up plans for a third round. And the first step in this quest for world dominion, he explained, was the creation of the United States of Europe. That's why the Union is there. It's for world domination. So you see, there's some truth to what Trump said. It's a vehicle for Germany, and you're manipulating the currency, and it's really an implicit Deutschmark. And you're hurting the other member states. They're getting weaker as you're getting stronger. Mr. Armstrong said, we know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. It's using the vehicle to attempt world domination. And those plans started as far back as 1943 when they knew they were going to lose round two. He went on to say, prophecy shows 10 kings, 10 dictators will arise in Europe and give their power to Germany. And as we've said so many times before, this was his signature prophecy. Anybody who followed his work, his ministry, his booklets, his programs, they knew all about what you just heard on that audio clip. They knew about what he was saying in the 1930s, and then again in the 40s and the 50s. He knew all of this that we see happening today because of what's revealed in biblical prophecy. Isaiah chapter 10, verse 5, it says, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff in their hand is my indignation. God calls this kingdom, this nation, which heads up the 10 kingdoms now forming in Europe. God calls this system, he calls this power, his rod, his staff. The staff in their hand is my indignation. I'll send them against a hypocritical nation, it says in the next verse. And so the rod, I mean, this is God's, it's a spanking mechanism. It's the rod of God's anger. It's what he uses to punish the end-time descendants of Israel. Now you know who Israel is in Bible prophecy, and you know who Assyria is in Bible prophecy, if you understand the truth contained in the United States and Britain in prophecy. That book gives you the master key to understanding your Bible, to understanding a third of the Bible, that is prophecy. The all-important master key has been found, Mr. Armstrong said. That key is knowledge of the astonishing identity of the American and British peoples, as well as the German, in biblical prophecies. Identifying modern-day Assyria, that's part of the master key. This astonishing identity, fully revealed in that book, that went right around the world. 6 million copies or so were distributed from 1940 to today. He said later on in the book, Mr. Armstrong did, the Assyrians before 604 BC left their land north of Babylon and migrated northwest through the lands that are now Georgia, Ukraine, Poland, and into the land that is called Germany today. He said, today the descendants of those Assyrians are known as the German people. That's a fact of history. And so it opens our eyes to the truth of prophecies like the ones here in Isaiah 10. Verse 6 again says, I will send him, the Assyrian rod, I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. And so God sends this rod of anger against a hypocritical nation and also a rebellious church, we can add. Isaiah chapter 5, there's a verse over there that says God's against us. And so, I mean, ultimately it's God who's doing the afflicting here. This is what it takes for our peoples to finally wake up. This is what it takes for our peoples to finally understand why this world is the way it is, why curses have been setting in. Verse 7 says, howbeit he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. And so, to be sure, there's some in the leadership that don't know, that aren't anticipating another world war, that maybe aren't there trying to dominate the world. But there are plenty who are thinking that way and who are using the union and who are using the euro exactly the way Mr. Armstrong said that they would back in that letter from the 1960s. We know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. We just know that. That's in their heart. Now, there is. I mean, there's this verse here, verse 7 we just read, but also Habakkuk 1 that talks about the mind change. The Daniel 8 man that comes along, and I mean, he's a charismatic fellow. But then there's a mind change, and history repeats itself, and the war machine is right there. That's why this is so dangerous, what we're witnessing, what we're seeing. They're just openly talking about building up the war machine. And as it happens, Germany is the economic powerhouse of the continent. And along comes a U.S. president that's done a pretty good job of identifying quite a few of the problems. But then to say, hey, we'll abandon NATO or NATO's obsolete, you guys fend for yourselves. What a dangerous move that is. And naive. And ignorant, too. Ignorant of history. Look at Revelation 17. You talk about, again, going back to that quote from Mr. Armstrong, as soon as they realized they were going to lose the war, well, all their top leaders, the generals, the scientists, the industrialists, the bankers, they started drawing up plans for the next round. That's the way they think. Revelation 17:8, it says, the beast that you saw was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wander, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they beheld, or rather behold, the beast that was and is not and yet is. This beast is going to ascend out of the bottomless pit. And you can look at the Greek word there for bottomless pit. It means abyss. In other words, it went underground. There's another resurrection coming. What happened during the World War II era? That was the sixth head of this beast. Seven are prophesied. Mr. Armstrong wrote, I believe he spoke this. It's recorded or written in the autobiography, but it's from a radio broadcast in 1945 where he said, we don't understand German thoroughness. Here again, notice what he says. From the very start of World War II, they have considered the possibility of losing this second round as they did the first. And they have carefully, methodically planned in such eventuality the third round. World War III, Hitler has lost. This round of war in Europe is over, and the Nazis have now gone underground. They plan to come back and win on the third try. It's still there underground. Never mind that there's been a couple, three generations since that statement. It's still there underground, and you can be sure there's a spirit behind it. You go back and look at the history, though, and here coming out of that Second World War, the German people just demoralized, but not destroyed. Not destroyed. So many of their towns, like Dresden, were in rubble. But the German people, the German nation, certainly wasn't destroyed. It was rebuilt. And fast. Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill in February 1945, even as they were setting up plans to rebuild them, they said that they're going to destroy German militarism and Nazism and ensure that Germany never rises again, the militaristic Germany, that is. They said together in this joint statement, we are determined to disarm and disband all German armed forces, break up for all time the German General Staff, that has repeatedly contrived the resurgence of German militarism. I mean, it's just happened over and over and over again in history. It's been repeated. We're determined to remove or destroy all German military equipment, eliminate or control all German industry that could be used for military production. We're going to disarm them, and they're never, ever going to be a militaristic state again. And now look at what they're talking about today on both sides of the Atlantic. Verse 12 says, "And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast." That refers to the United States of Europe now forming. Ten kings are going to emerge out of that iron and clay mixture. Ten kings are going to emerge out of the 28. And they're going to be headed up by Germany. And we know, as Mr. Armstrong said in that paper, we know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. That's what's coming. That's what they're planning, so many of them. And that's why they see Donald Trump as an opportunity. That's why they see, added to that, that's why they see Brexit as an opportunity. Never mind the official statements. Never mind some of the press coverage. Plans are being drawn up. What an opportunity. For all of the dangers that Donald Trump poses, Joshka Fisher says, we should also see this as a tremendous opportunity, because now we have our chance to build the empire. Now we have our chance to build that military union. Verse 13 of Revelation 17 here says, "These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast." One mind. All coming together for a short reign, as it turns out. But what a destructive one. Let me just take you through one last passage here before we break. This is over in Hosea 2. God here talking about the people of Israel, latter-day Israelites, Ephraim in particular, all the blessings that he's bestowed upon us because of those promises made to Ephraim and Manasseh, that birthright passed on down to those two lads in Genesis, the book of Genesis, chapter 48. Read those last few chapters of Genesis. Hosea 2 and verse 8 says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." All of this unmatched power and wealth. All the power and the wealth and the prosperity that our nations have amassed in these last two or three centuries, God bestowed those blessings upon us. The people of Britain, the British Empire, coming to power and prominence in the 1800s, and the United States following right behind. But now the sun has set on the British Empire. And now the United States is in the midst of a stunning decline. God says in verse 9, "Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover," this is verse 10, "now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand." It's not the enemies of the traditional enemies of Britain and America that discover her lewdness. It's going to be those lovers. And you look at that loving, I mean, historically, yes, they were enemies, but you look at that loving relationship that's gone on for decades since the end of World War II. The United States helpfully building up the Empire of Germany, the Kingdom of Germany, the nation of Germany, and Japan too for that matter, and then providing that protective hedge around it, that security umbrella. And then now, what are we told? Well, Joschka Fischer says that, well, because of Donald Trump, hey, we're suffering. He's a threat. Donald Tusk, he's dangerous. America all of a sudden is dangerous. We need a military machine of our own. And so they're going to build one. And they're going to use it. And as God says here, our lewdness is going to be opened wide right before our lovers. You can read more about that double cross in Ezekiel 23. This loving relationship, all of these warm exchanges, and yet how fast we're seeing those things change. Look at how fast that relationship now is deteriorating. And now it's the United States, and now it's America. America's the bad guy. America's being led by the dictator. America's being led by the Nazi. America's being led by the authoritarian. Satan is setting the stage, and perfectly so, for this last final push. They have the political union, for the most part. They need the Daniel 8 man. They have the economic union. Germany's dominating. The Vatican still has to come in there and lend its good graces, as Mr. Armstrong used to say. And then finally, they just need the military. They need the military machine. And then everything is in place for Isaiah 10 to be fulfilled, for Ezekiel 23 to be fulfilled, for Hosea 2 to be fulfilled, for Daniel 2 to be fulfilled, for Revelation 17, Revelation 13, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, Daniel 11. Is prophecy important? That's how we stay fired up for God's work. We're drawing so close to the end of this age. Jesus said to watch and pray always that you might be accounted worthy to escape. Get ready for what's coming. Get ready for what's coming. Stay on guard. Watch unto prayer. These are some of the admonitions the Bible gives to us, and for good reason. Because Christ said that what's coming is a time of trouble like this world has never seen. It's referred to in Daniel 12:1, Jeremiah 30 and verse 7, Matthew 24, 21 and 22. There's a verse in Ezekiel 5, I forget the exact one, or maybe Ezekiel 4. That's what we've got to prepare our minds for. And that's why we keep our noses in the Bible. And that's why we have a steady diet of Bible prophecy. Herbert Armstrong, when talking about that program he gave on December 7th, 1941, I related this to you the other day, but he said he had all of that training, 20-some years, in the newspaper business and following and watching world events. And then his conversion happened, and then God opened his mind to the truth, and then he was going through some intensive Bible study for some 14, 15 years. And early on, when he started his radio program, he just kind of looked at or listened to the other ones that he heard on the radio, and although he had the truth of God, the format was somewhat similar to what he heard, the singing and the prayers and so on, and then when that happened, his first plane flight, December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor was attacked. It was that very day when he understood that he had to take a different approach than the other preachers, that he had to give you the latest headlines of what was happening in the world and then explain the meaning and then tell you where it was leading. And now, today, we see so many of those bold proclamations, like the couple that I've read to you here today, or the one that he read himself on that clip I just played. They're coming to pass. They're happening before our eyes. It's an exciting time to be alive. Watch, though. Watch and pray always. We've got to stay locked into God and to His truth in these last days that we're in. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to send us an email this week. We're coming up quick on the weekend. It's already Thursday. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
In Richard Palmer's article from the other day, this was posted at thetrumpet.com, this piece titled Who Made America Great, he focused in on the point of geography, something we've talked about before on this program. Robert Morley gave a show on that, and Jeremiah Jacques wrote a piece a couple years ago making that same point. But in that article, Richard refers to Robert Kaplan, who used to work for Stratfor, I believe. He wrote a book, Earning the Rockies, it says, How Geography Shapes America's Role in the world. And in this clip that Richard came across, he doesn't focus in on the point about geography, but here is Robert Kaplan discussing America's vast wealth and power and what happens in a world when America withdraws. Clip 7.
American power may have done bad things from time to time, and one can criticize it all you want. But on the whole, I argue it's been a force for good. At the present, the U.S. Navy is 300 ships. Imagine a world with a 200-ship Navy. You would have a greater chance of war between China and Japan, between Iran and the Arabian Gulf sheikdoms, between India and China, etc. Because between the 7th Fleet in East Asia, the Western Pacific rather, and the 5th Fleet in the Persian Gulf in the Middle East, those are the silent guardians of keeping the peace, essentially. So American power is, to the degree that the world has any sort of stability whatsoever, it's mainly due to the very blunt, unacknowledged fact of American power.
American power has maintained the stability since the end of World War II. And so what happens to the international order of things when that power is diminished? David Petraeus, the former general, I forget what he was testifying at or to, but it's at Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and this is what he had to say yesterday about the American International Order. Clip one.
The international order that America created is now under unprecedented threat from multiple directions, including by increasingly capable revisionist powers, that is, countries dissatisfied with the status quo, by Islamic extremist organizations that want to destroy our way of life, and by technologies and tactics that are reducing America's capacity to defend ourselves and our interests. As important as those various threats are, however, the world order has also been undermined by something perhaps even more pernicious, a loss of self-confidence, resolve, and strategic clarity on America's part about our vital interest in preserving and protecting the system we sacrifice so much to bring into being and have sacrificed so much to preserve. The major challenge to the U.S.-led international order, the rise of a set of revisionist powers, is a development Americans have recognized but been somewhat reluctant to confront. Since the end of the Cold War, our hopeful assumption has been that mutual self-interest could provide a pathway for deepening partnership among the major powers, while globalization would gradually liberalize the internal policies of all countries. What we have seen instead, unfortunately, is that as certain countries have grown more powerful, so too has their desire to challenge at least some elements of the status quo. While domestically, their authoritarianism has grown both more entrenched and yet also more insecure. In particular, we see several countries, including Iran, Russia, and China, now working to establish a kind of sphere of influence over their respective near abroads, which include areas of vital strategic importance to the U.S. and where we have allies and partners to whom we are bound by shared interests and values.
That's from David Petraeus's testimony earlier this week, him specifically mentioning there toward the end, Iran, Russia, and China working to establish or expand their sphere of influence. Now, you go to thetrumpet.com, as we've been covering this week. Brent Noctegal had a piece on Iran. They're in the working through the Houthis, the attack on that Saudi Arabian ship, I believe it was. He's got another one that we prepared just this morning on Iran's challenge with this ballistic missile it fired on Sunday. And the United States coming out with a strong statement yesterday saying that they're putting Iran on notice. And then look at what else we've been covering even this week on this show. That one column where the author was saying, look, America is pretty much handing the world to China. China's now tackling the United States in space as well. And then you have the resurgence of Russia opening up all these new bases in the Arctic. We linked to an article today, by the way. It's Putin's World. That's at The Atlantic. And that article goes and shows how popular Putin is in Europe. There's a lot of people, a lot of leaders in Europe that rather like Putin and the fact that he's an authoritarian. Well, Europe's about to get their Putin. They're about to get their strongman, Daniel 8. What happens? What happens when America is in retreat? For all these years, I mean, it's been as Kaplan said, it's been a force for good. But now you see it in retreat. And now Petraeus talked about just the, how did he put it, the ambivalence of America today, given all of these threats that we're surrounded by. I think this next one's a little bit shorter. This is clip three.
The paradox of the moment is that just as the threats to the world order we created have grown ever more apparent, American resolve about its defense has become somewhat ambivalent.
Yeah, that's the paradox of the moment. All of these looming threats and America's resolve about its defense has become ambivalent. I have another article here today. I won't have time to get through much of it, but it's from DefenseOne.com. Talking about if America does lift sanctions on Russia, that this could just be, this could be huge for Russia's growing military. And it describes the power. It rates Russia as having the second most powerful military in the world. Russia, this poor state with a small population, relatively speaking, and yet all of this military hardware, all of this aggressiveness. I'm picking it up after it describes a lot of the equipment and tanks and things that it has. It says if they actually implement this thing come September, you could see a tank army sitting on the Polish border. It's quoting from some commentator. It becomes kind of like a tank army in being. It says later, Russia has also used drones very effectively in Ukraine to target artillery fire. That's the bear awakening. And then the next section talks about how the bear is becoming a monster. The Russian bear has been awakened, and now a monster is forming, just like it is in China, just like it is in Europe. Look at how many Russian agents have been, well, further on it says, the Trump White House could undo the rule changes almost unilaterally. If that were to happen, along with an easing of economic sanctions against Putin's government, Russia could begin to acquire technology to bring its military equipment in line with that of the United States. I mean, here's another dangerous hotspot. What if the United States eases up on Russia? That's under discussion. That is under discussion. That's about all, though, that we have time for today. Perhaps I can get into a little bit more of this on tomorrow's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program this weekend. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you one more time this week. Come back tomorrow.